Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to a wonderful call today. We've got an interview that's taking place. I've been really looking forward to this. It's with Denise Marcil, who is president of Denise Marcil Literary Agency, Inc., and represents a wide variety of commercial fiction and nonfiction, from suspense thrillers and contemporary women's fiction to management books, many of which have appeared on national bestseller lists, including the New York Times, USA Today, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times. She was named one of Glamour magazine's top 10 outstanding young working women and has been interviewed in many publications. She was also a featured story in a nationally televised PBS program called Working Women. Her interest and business acumen in nonfiction focuses on self-help and popular reference books such as health, women's issues, business, and parenting. Now, her list of accomplishments really is staggering, and it's too much to really go into here, but you can read everything on her website if you want to go take a look at DeniseMarcilLiteraryAgency.com. Now, I met Denise through one of her authors by the name of June Kottner, and June and I are friends, and we were doing this mastermind group together, and June introduced us, and from there, Denise and I would meet in New York, whether it was at her office or at Book Expo America, and each time I would invite her out here to Oregon, and I'd send her bottles of our local wines to entice her, and you know what? Last summer, she made it out here. Hi, Denise. Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Hello. Yes, and we loved our loving our trip. I had been to Oregon before, and it just took my husband several years to persuade him. And of course, once he was there, he loved it too.
Yeah, he went fishing, I think, and then you and I went and had a wonderful dinner and just had a great conversation. So I thought you'd be just perfect to interview today, because we've got lots of people here who they're authors, they've already written their books, or they're in the process of writing their books. I mean, we've got people in various stages. And so I want to talk to you about a number of questions that have come up, and you just are the perfect person here. So let's launch into this. Denise, what is the single biggest mistake that authors or writers make when they're looking for an agent?
It's a good question. I think, based on the queries that I get, or if I go to a writer's conference.
Busy office. I can hear it now. You got some deal going on right now, right?
No, that's...
Oh, that's someone else who's joined the call.
Else.
Okay, hang on.
860.
My apologies.
That's okay.
Hang on 1 second. I'll probably edit that out of the interview. All right, good deal. Okay, let's take it from the top.
Okay, so the mistake that people make, both when they approach me, say, whether it's a query letter or, say, a pitch at a writer's conference or those, you know, the speed dating, pitching to agents, is that authors haven't done their research on finding the agents who represent what they write. That's the first, and that's the, particularly with the internet, that's the easiest thing to do now.
Mm-hmm.
So it wastes their time and it wastes the agent's time. So that's really the biggest mistake. Then in terms of how you approach an agent, say with a query letter, is or not following the guidelines, again, which are usually available, if not on the if the agent doesn't have a website, but I think most do, books on literary agents or other websites to tell you how they want to be approached, whether it's email only, or some people still want a written query letter, some people don't want manuscripts at all or any sample material. That's a matter of just following, researching and following the guidelines.
So is there a place that people can go to do the research to find out what agents, what topics that they cover? Is there a place?
Well,
that one,
yes, lots of places.
There's
the AAR website, the Association of Authors Representatives. There are 350 to 400 agents who are members. And that website, you can search by topic. That's a good place to start. I still like Jeff Herman's book called The Insider's Guide to editors, publishers, and literary agents. That every year that's updated. And as far as agents go, the individual agent fills out the form and updates the form. So it's very specific, and the agent is agents use it as marketing tools. You know, this is the type of book I'm looking for. And then the agent's website, and there are lots of I think there's a site called 1,000 Literary Agents. But my advice is, don't rely on one source. If you find, say, if you're writing suspense, or you're writing business books, or you're writing science fiction or women's fiction, and you find an agent or a group of agents who represent, you know, what you're writing, check and double check various sources to see that the information is consistent, because I know from query letters that I get that it'll say, you know, I read that you do such and such. Well, that's absolutely incorrect.
Mm.
You know, like, so there's information that is not out there. So do your research, and then I guess the final place to do is certainly go to the agent or agency's website.
Right. So after you've checked all these different sources, narrow it down to who makes the most sense, and then go to their sites.
Yep.
So I think sometimes for people, when they go to a website, they wonder if anybody's, you know, really there or looking at it. But you are. I mean, you do take a look when people submit, or, you know, do you take a look at what you receive, or who does? Do you have people working for you who do that, or how does that work?
Yes, usually. I mean, most agents have interns who interns and then assistants who read all the query letters. Some agents read them all themselves, but usually there's somebody screening them, and the agent has taught them what they're looking for and what they're not, you know, what they're not looking for. So yes, we do rely on other people to look at the first, you know,
so
first pass. But things, you know, for myself, I mean, I would ask whether it's an intern or an assistant. There are certain things I tell them, such as, is it personalized, dear Ms. Marshall? That's another thing. Don't put dear agent. With email queries now, very often, more often than not, they just say dear agent, or they don't even have any salutation. Well, that, I'm not interested in that. I want someone who's done their homework. You have to remember that agents are individuals and people too. So that makes a difference. If somebody says, I saw that you represent so-and-so, and I really like that person's work, or I saw on your website that you represent such and such a book, or this, you represent so-and-so from your website, or I read in Jeff Herman's guide, or I saw in the acknowledgments page of such and such novel that you represent so-and-so, I think the readers of my book would of that author would be interested in my book. That makes a difference. Another thing is, in some of these guides, Writer's Digest has literary agent guides as well. You know, they might ask you kind of what your personal interests are. Sometimes, you know, I'll get a query that taps into that, one of those interests, that it's like, oh, you know, it's subjective.
Mm-hmm. Like a real person. They're talking to a real person.
Absolutely.
It also, I'm struck by the fact that much of this applies to media as well. So if someone personalizes things to you and takes the time to do the research, it speaks to the fact that they do that. And when they do have, you know, their agent, and they do have the contract, and they are doing publicity, that they're going to be just as thorough. That's a good thing. So, Denise, what are some of the biggest changes to the industry in, say, the past 3 years or so that authors and writers should know about? Everything's changed. So what would you say in your industry?
E-books and the influence of e-books and then the proliferation of self-published titles. Up to 3 to 5 years ago, an author had a self-published title. For the most part, a publisher, a big publisher, wouldn't be interested unless with that physical book, say they'd sold 50,000, 100,000 copies. Now, with ebooks, one, I think that publishers realize that with the extensive self-publishing of ebooks by so many, authors, that they almost saw them as competition. Which I think that was smart. It's almost like another publishing industry. So, as I'm sure your writers know, authors who sold a lot of books, that publishers went after them, to them, such as people like Amanda Hocking, and E.L. James. So she was not self-published. She was published by a small Australian publisher, and Vintage, which is a trade paperback imprint of Random House, bought those rights and, of course, made it a mega international bestseller. So ebooks and self-publishing is now respectable, and publishers look for those authors who have sold well, and usually because they've done their constantly do social media and spend a lot of time marketing their books online and doing things like offering them free for a certain amount of time and getting lots of reviews. And so as a result, most of the big publishers have started their own e-only imprints. Most of them do not, say whether it's Avon's Romance line, Pocket Books has Pocket Star, I think it's Warner has one of their Forever lines, William Morrow has Suspense called Witness Impulse, St. Martin's, they all have them, and that's where they are testing out authors. They're signing up authors who they realize they're talented, but it's so hard to launch new authors. Where maybe you used to get launched in mass market paperback, that's not as viable anymore. They are looking for new authors and publishing them as ebooks with the view towards that this is a farm team, clearly to develop them and then develop a if they do well, develop a following and then put them in the print.
This is fascinating. So you're speaking, I was going to ask you what should they be working on now, and what I'm hearing is starting that platform is your most important
piece. Absolutely. Whether they're fiction or nonfiction, every author needs a platform.
And what do you specifically look at, Denise? If a writer sends a proposal to you, and then before you even contact them, do you go look at their platform first?
Well,
and what do you look for?
Yeah, say if it's nonfiction, always. That's the that's the most important thing, because there are editors, when you do a pitch to them, it's almost like they're not listening to what the content is. They'll just go to, what's the author's platform?
Wow.
Before they even want to look at it, if they don't have a huge platform, they don't want to see it. I mean, that's not everybody, but some editors are like that. But they're all the editors. For all nonfiction, you have to have, the editors have to buy books that where the author has a huge platform. Why? Because these days, there's very few authors who the publishers don't rely on to do most of the publicity and the market and the promotion themselves.
Right.
Where publishers put their money is they put it in marketing, which is placement in bookstores co-op advertising, placement on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon, and maybe places like Kobo, maybe the iBookstore too.
Mm-hmm. And for people who don't understand, when you go into a bookstore and you see like a big display right in front of you, or there's a stack of books all along the counter, or they're on end caps or whatever, publishers pay for that. Right. They pay for that kind of placement. Yeah. So
the publishers are happy to, for many of their books, to offer the co-op, and they'll say, oh, you know, there's co-op available for this. We'd really like this on the front table of new fiction, or what's new in trade paperbacks. Table at the front of the store, but it's the store or the Amazon that makes the decision, and they make the decision based on, well, we give the real estate space, the physical space, or we give the online space. Are we going to sell enough books to warrant giving away that space?
Right. So back onto the platform.
Sure.
If we could just define that a little bit. I talk about it a lot in my program, but you know, there may be people here who still aren't really clear. What do you mean by platform? Are there certain social media outlets that are the most important in your opinion, or what would you say about
that? I define it as outreach. Platform is what the author's outreach is in terms of being able to publicize and hopefully sell the book, and that it could be social media, which would include, of course, a minimum would be a website and a blog. Publishers want to know how many followers the author has on Facebook, on Twitter, perhaps on LinkedIn if it's a business book. Traditional media, are they, or is someone an expert who's the go-to person for traditional media to interview, whether it's TV, radio, or online? Is the person a speaker? Are they out there making contact with audiences and would have the ability to sell books to those audiences? Or again, if they're a business writer, or say a motivational speaker, do they have clients who they can sell the book to, and also clients who, if they bought the book, are could be kind of advocates for and tell their friends and colleagues about the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there are any particular sites. I mean, it seems to me that a lot of people seem to have regular blogs or writing gigs on Huffington Post. It used to be more exclusive, but again, if you have one particular blog that goes viral, that's the kind of thing that makes a publisher interested.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but it has to be national. That's the other thing. Even if somebody has a strong regional visibility, media visibility, online and or traditional, the publishers can find that limiting.
Okay, that's good to know. I don't know if I did a Facebook training recently, just to share this little piece. And one thing that I discovered and learned about is that you can do Facebook ads and actually create an ad that just is shown on the newsreels of like the employees of the New York Times or the employees of the Wall Street Journal. I mean, there's ways to actually. So it's like the new big thing in publicity is. That's another vehicle, so I just wanted to throw that out there. So, Denise, when it comes to having a publisher, if the author, the writer is building the platform, what is the publisher bringing to the table?
Traditional publisher should be bringing, that's a good question, they should be bringing the editorial expertise to make the book, edit it and make it very readable, organized if it's nonfiction. That is a criticism a lot of self-published books, that they have not been they're not well written or they're not tightly edited. So that's one. Two, the publisher can get the distribution. And I find and certainly read about this as well, that even people who are very successful, successfully self-published in digital ebooks, still seem to, many of them still want the prestige of a printed book by an established house. So what they can get is distribution through bookstores, and they can do that marketing. They can get behind it and spend the money for the placement, either in the stores or on the retailer websites that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's just so much to all of this, and publishers do bring a lot. I remember interviewing a couple of social media gurus, if you will. These guys are pretty well known, and they got published by a major publisher, and all their fans were like, well, why did you bother doing that? I mean, you're big in the social media world. And they said, because it's cool, and we get greater distribution, and also, quite frankly, with media, it can be easier, too. I mean, if you've got a big-name publisher backing you, it opens doors, because they know the editing is good. They know the book has been fact checked. Mm-hmm. They know all that.
Yeah, so. I'll give you an example where that can happen. Where I do some volunteer work for my local library in Stamford, Connecticut, and I'm on a committee called the Author Series, and we bring authors to the library for public presentations. And being a literary agent, I have said recently that the woman who is the head of director of communications always sends out press releases and works regularly with the local newspaper, which is actually a fairly big paper. And some more often than not, they don't cover the events. And we get some pretty big authors. This week we had Chris Bojalian, a new big-time New York Times author, and we didn't get really much coverage with him. So I said, listen, we've got J. Courtney Sullivan coming up in the end of May, who wrote Commencement and Maine, and the latest book is The Engagements, and her publisher is Random House. I said, I think, you know, let me see if we can. I just believe that if one of these, the reporters who cover books and do the lifestyle section, if they get a pitch from, you know, a New York Random House publicist offering an exclusive interview with this with Sullivan, that might help. Well, they weren't sure, but what did I hear Tuesday night? Yep, so and so seems to be very interested, according to the Random House publicist. So
okay, yeah, okay.
Yep. That was a real-life experience.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So, Denise, let's say that someone pitched you, and it got through your intern or your associate, whoever, and it came to you, came in front of you, and you were intrigued. What's the process? Do you send them an email? How does that first meeting go? What happens?
You mean a query letter, a letter?
Yeah.
I would either write and say, please send the first three chapters or 50 pages and a synopsis, or please send, if it's nonfiction, please send the proposal in a first chapter or two chapters. If I was really excited, I try to pick up the phone.
Okay.
Which is another reason to have your phone number in your letter.
Okay. Good to know. Some people, kind of shy away from the phone now. They think it's all email, but not necessarily.
Well, I'm old school. And also, why would I do the phone? I would just, if I was that excited about something, and I do call people, certainly I've called people over the years, it's like, I want to get a jump on the other agents, and two, I want to, in terms of timing, but also in terms of saying, I don't usually call people, but this sounds really fabulous, and I'd like an exclusive, and, do a little sales pitch of why they should let me see it first.
That's awesome. And then are there any questions that the writer should ask you that you would be kind of impressed by?
At that point, What about my query that did you like?
Oh, okay.
What was it that you liked? You could ask if somebody wants an exclusive. Well, if I gave an exclusive, how long? You know, would I have to give an exclusive? And
do you still?
When could you get back to me?
Okay, good. So it used to be that when you queried an agent, you weren't supposed to query a lot of others, but that's not the case anymore, correct?
That's why you're asking. A long time. No, I mean we assume that it's going out to lots of people.
Yeah. Let's say you've taken the person on, you've worked with them, you get a proposal together, right? Because whatever they sent you isn't going to be what you would probably take out. Is that correct?
Whatever they sent me.
Yeah, if they sent you a proposal, a query,
right.
a proposal, then you would work with them to create a proposal that you would give to publish.
Yes, I'd usually give editorial feedback, and we often go back and forth a couple of times on revisions. Though several years ago, I made a change that what I would do with fiction and not nonfiction, I'll say at the outset that I'll do two rounds of revisions. But if it's not, and I say this at the outset, so the author would know. But if they can't get it by that second time, that I would ask them to hire a freelance editor because I've probably given them everything I can, and they've probably done everything they can at that point.
Okay, so you're still interested, but bringing in someone else to kind of really make it tight and
yeah, I mean you can't in order to sell anything now or even 5 years ago, it has to be perfect.
Yeah.
Editors don't do a lot of editing, or they even if they want to, sometimes they're discouraged. It's like their attitude is there's always another book out there.
Oh dear, that applies to media too. By the way, you got to get
mm-hmm.
the pitch down because they'll move on to someone else.
Yep.
Yeah, you do. You have to get it right, and you have to get it right the first time. So, okay, so Denise, you went out and you sold the book. So you got a publisher for the author, for the writer. And so then what can someone expect? Are advances even given anymore? Does that even happen at this point?
Of course, yeah,
okay.
Other than if someone gets an e-book only deal, as I mentioned earlier, most houses don't pay in advance. I think one or two. They might occasionally. They might pay something very, very modest. But no, there are always advances. They're more modest across the board than they have been. I can't really say what advances are because it depends on the book itself, whether it's a genre book, a mass market, or a hot nonfiction property, or a new novel.
Mm-hmm.
But there's advance against royalties. And yes, so there are advances.
A lot of times you can use it for the promotion to help promote. You get the
yes,
advance,
that's
use
right.
it to promote
yes.
the book. Okay.
Don't
so,
quit your day job.
At least not for a while, right?
No.
Okay. So one of the advantages, I think, to having an agent, I mean, there are many, but one, of course, is that you've walked this territory. I mean, you do this every day. You know what contracts look like and electronic rights, and, you're looking for the best interest for your authors. What does a contract look like, and are there certain pieces of it that apply across the board, or are they all very different also?
You mean, are they different from publisher to publisher?
Yes. And book to book, really.
They're similar from publisher to publisher because the terms are somewhat standard, such as the basic right when you license the book to a publisher is that to print and publish and distribute the book. Now it could be sell and the book. It might not be print these days. So that's the basic right, and you're also so granting them the copyright for the term of copyright, which is currently the life of the author plus 70 years. There should be royalties, and those spelled out for different formats, hardcover, trade paperback, mass market, ebook, subsidiary rights such as book club rights or translation rights or audio rights, your option that the publisher has first look on your next book, warranties and indemnities. The author indemnifies the publisher against any claims such as that the work is that it is original, that it does not libel anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Termination clause is important. Spelling out how what's considered the book is considered out of print or out of stock, and the process by which an author may get the rights back. So I mean, those the actual language may change, but most of those clauses are in most publishing contracts, and the contracts are certainly written. They're written by the publisher in the publisher's favor. So a good agent does a lot of negotiations to change the terms so they're beneficial, or as beneficial can be for the author.
That's great. And authors need that. They need something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a question if someone wants to take you to the point where an agent has asked to represent the author, an author could ask, how much negotiation do you do with the various publishers in terms of changing the terms? Do you have boilerplate contracts with different publishers? That means usually each agency has negotiated the terms with, say, whether it's Macmillan or St. Martin's or a Simon & Schuster imprint or a Penguin imprint, and you've negotiated kind of the best terms across the board so that you're not renegotiating all these little clauses each time.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that makes sense.
So that's a question to ask. What are your boilerplate contracts like, or do you have a boilerplate with?
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. I hope people wrote that down. That's a good one. You didn't mention foreign rights, but, sometimes I have people, they'll want to do publicity in other countries, and it just doesn't really work that way. Do you want to talk about foreign rights a little bit? That's just part of the contract, correct?
Yeah, it's one of the subsidiary rights where I said, translation
Oh, okay.
rights. It's a subsidiary right, and many agents will want to retain those translation rights for the author, and the agent, the U.S. agent, most of us have people in foreign countries, or they might have someone here in this country who sells, who's kind of an intermediary and sells all the foreign rights. Some books, it depends on the type of book that you have. Many self-help books, it depends on the countries. Europe in general does far fewer self-help books. That's changing to some extent, but I can remember 10 years ago my French agent said, we do not publish, we do not need self-help books in France.
I hear it.
And anything that's I'd say in the 90s, religion and spiritual books were very popular here. Forget Europe, not at all.
But that is changing now. I mean, the French.
Not necessarily, but that's why U.S. agents, many of them have foreign agents because we rely on those those agents to know what's selling in Spain versus Brazil versus Greece.
Right, and they keep up on the trends. I mean, they can tell you when that's changing. Okay, mm-hmm, now we're more open to this. Yeah, that's a great thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's also, I've had many many clients where suddenly they, you know, there were foreign rights deals made, and one day, you know, this FedEx package arrives, and their book is in Korean now, and you know, or Chinese.
And no one told them, right?
Yeah. No, they just shows up. It's like, oh, look at this.
Right.
It's pretty cool. So, what about timelines, Denise? If you were to take someone on, and I'm sure this is kind of all over the map, you might take someone on and sell the book right away, and other times it might take longer. But can you kind of give us a feel? What's the quickest that transaction happened, and what's one you might continue to be working on?
The quickest would be I took on a project. We did the editorial work together, and I sold it in the first round of submissions. And a round would be, I decide, okay, I'm going to go out to 12 different publishers, or I'm going to go out to 6 different publishers. And usually those books would be usually nonfiction, occasionally fiction. And those first rounds that I would be something I was very hot. I knew it was a big book, and I would usually do an auction.
Mm-hmm.
And an auction is, I would say at the, in my verbal pitch, and then again in my letter that I plan to close, and I like that means I want an answer by a specific date, and then the agent would also say I will, closer to that date I will provide you the rules of the auction, and that those are the fastest sales, where it's on the first round. And others, usually it's with fiction. I'm unusual, though. I mean, I do know many agents will go out maybe a dozen times, maybe more, but if they don't sell the book, that's it. And they can say, okay, let's go to the next book. You know, what do you have next? They might just drop the author.
Because you're doing a lot of work without any payment,
right?
You know,
right.
Until it sells.
Right. And then they go on to the next. So, yeah. It's that again. That varies by. There's so many literary agents and who have different business styles.
Well, what would
others?
You
I'll just keep going and going and going, and I'll say, okay, I can't sell this. Let's go on to the next book, but. I'll also often pull a book off if we keep getting the same responses or getting enough negative responses. Like, okay, they're not getting this. You got to change this.
What would you tell people who maybe are approached by agents who will review the material, you know, for payment? Are you seeing any of that?
Well, I happen to be a longtime advocate of reading fees. They were the Independent Literary Agents Association, which was started in the late 70s and went on till the beginning of the 1990s, was an agents association of usually small agencies, people who worked for themselves or kind of boutique agencies. There was another older association called the Society of Authors Representatives. And they had in their bylaws no reading fees. The ILA allowed reading fees. In the early 90s, the two organizations merged, and they had about 2 years grandfathering the reading fees. And then since then, now that it's the AAR, there's no reading fees. My attitude is agents are in business to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wants me to read on the weekend or at night their material and offer some sort of critique for free. Didn't like that. That doesn't make sense in terms of business. So I always charged a modest fee. But it was a member of AAR, and I had to comply chose to comply with the buyer laws.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you determine whether the agent is charging a reasonable fee and or are they just making money and you're paying for their time and expertise, or are they making more money on their fees? Well, again, the internet is a wonderful thing. You do research on agents, and there are a lot of websites out there that can give people information. You know, stay away from this person.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Again, check Jeff Herman's guide.
Oh, okay. Good.
I think that guide, or maybe it might be the one of the Writer's Digest guides. I remember used to having to fill out a form, one of those forms, and it would ask the percentage of your income that came from fees versus commissions.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Mm-hmm. That's a good book. I have it right here on my shelf, the 2013.
It's a great resource.
Edition. Yeah. So I want to just touch back for just a second on
sure.
auctions, because it's such, you know, it's a very
my
intriguing
yeah.
process. So an auction, basically, to put it in other words, is when you have a book you think is going to be pretty hot,
mm-hmm.
and you go out to a number of different publishers and you say, hey, you know, one of you can have this. You have until this date to decide, right?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. so that's what that
and
means.
And if it's nonfiction, I would often, if the author... You know, I'd spend time with the author, particularly videos these days. And we don't do this as much, but I would bring the author to New York and try to set up appointments with the editor and the marketing people and/or publicity, whoever the editor could get for a meeting, with the idea that they'd putting the author in front of the publishing team, that the author would be a good salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
For him herself, so
well,
they would see the if someone's mediagenic,
right.
if indeed they could promote the book. You know, was the author a good self-promoter, and you know, they'd have discussions about, okay, your proposal says you can do this, this, and this, or you have done this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set a date, and you put in writing your rules of the auction, and sometimes it might be what's called a blind bid auction, and it's one round. It's only one round. All the publishers only get one bid.
Oh, wow.
And they don't know who they're bidding against. Well, they never know who they're bidding against. But they don't know what the other range of bids is. And then you say, it's very specific, what the territories, I'm only offering U.S., Canada, an open market, or I'm offering world rights, or I'd entertain offers for world rights. What else? I want to see a written marketing plan. Or if it's going to be in rounds, you give specific rules. And for the agent, it's important to stick whatever your rules you put in writing is in terms of your reputation. Ethically, you have to stick to those rules.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Do you give a minimum bid?
One can have your own. You can do your own floor bid. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't. Occasionally, people might do that. You can do that.
And have you had a book that went into a bidding war where you're doing the rounds?
Yes, of course.
That would
yes.
be so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a lot of them.
A number, though. I would tend to do best bid.
Okay.
I like doing best bid because I found it would always. It was just the way to generate often the highest bid.
Oh, interesting.
Because they don't know who they're bidding against, and if they really want it, they can sometimes.
They go high.
That
exclusivity.
Hopefully they'll go crazy. You know.
Yeah, hopefully they go crazy, yeah.
We have to have this.
Yeah. All right, that's great. So the book's been sold to a publisher, and I know we need to wrap up here because you got to get back to your busy day, but what is considered a success now in terms of book sales, would you say?
It's hard to say. I was just looking at, it depends on the format. You know, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at the Publishers Weekly earlier bestseller list, where they actually list the book scan sales for the week. And book scan is... system owned by Nielsen that does the television ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So what it captures is point of sale, actual sales, in about 70. Publishers say it's about 70% of the market. It's not all outlets, but a number of them. So I was just saying to my assistant earlier, looking at the mass market sales, I mean, they range everything from, let's take number 20, 5,060 books to hit number 20 to 35,000 units for number one for 1 week.
Okay, wow.
And hardcover fiction, 47,000 for number one, and number 15, wow, 2,467 copies.
Okay.
That's a huge range.
Wow. Yes, it is.
Actually, number 20 is actually 2,300. But it drops down from 47,000 to, here's a big, the number two bestseller, Mary Higgins Clark, was 15,700.
Oh, okay.
The Goldfinch was 15,000 and change.
Mm-hmm.
James Patterson was the next one down at 12,000. And then they really drop to 8,070. You know? So it doesn't take a lot. It's really the volume per week.
Right.
And that's the bestseller list. So what's a good seller? I mean, those are big, big numbers if you're selling a couple of thousand books a week.
Mm-hmm. Those are big numbers, yep.
Mm-hmm. Most books sell, if you're lucky, you'll sell 72 or hardcovers or 100 a week.
And you said point of sale, so this wouldn't be special sales like when you're selling
the
back
of the room? No, point of sales is either a cash register sale,
yeah.
An actual
yeah.
cash register sale, or a credit card transaction or a mm-hmm. PayPal transaction on the internet.
Okay. And, you know, BookScan is another, it's a good point. If you do self-publish and then you want to look for a publisher, tell the truth on what you've sold because they're going to be able to see it, right?
Yes. Publishers, you get a subscription to this.
Yeah.
And publishers have this information, so.
They can't fudge your number.
Can't hide.
Yeah.
Right.
And it
right.
would look bad if you did.
Yes, that's right.
Well, Denise, do you have just a couple more minutes? I want to see if
sure,
you have
I do.
Questions.
Sure, of course.
Okay. So everyone listening, *2 on the phone if you do have a question. You know, we've covered a lot of information here, so I don't know. People might feel a little bit overwhelmed. I have no idea. I'm checking the Facebook group right now. We have a private Facebook group, too. Denise, where people can post questions and that kind of thing. So *2 if anybody would like to ask a question of Denise. She's here. We have an opportunity, and we don't get these every day, so let me know. Meanwhile, Denise, I sure appreciate your time. Oh, good.
It's been fun. Good
question. It has been fun, hasn't it?
Yes.
Okay, we've got, let's see, hang on. I got a couple questions. So Lake Oswego, is this Joe?
It's Joe.
Okay, what's your question?
Hi, I was very interested in the marketing information. Do you often negotiate on how much marketing will be done for a book? And is that true for fiction and nonfiction?
Good question about agents negotiating for marketing. Almost, maybe for mega, mega, mega bestsellers, but for the most part, even selling a book at an auction with you know, for healthy six-figure advance, publishers will not guarantee any marketing or advertising. So when I said about asking for a marketing plan, the publisher might put something in writing, but it's not a guarantee. It's more or less like, this is what you probably could expect, but they don't have to do any of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. That's a good one.
It's a good question.
Yeah, it really is. Next, we've got Jewel Ann, I believe. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I am.
You have a question for
me? I love this call, and thank you so much. I have to confess that I don't know what I don't know, so I'm going to ask a literary agent, even though I have one, in Lisa Hagen. And we have been going back and forth, and I wondered if it would be appropriate for me to send her the work I already have in place. Like I have done two self-published works, and we're working on the one that we've decided to do together, True North. She has my book proposal, and she has the information of all the chapters that I've written, that I have written for more chapters. Is it appropriate to ask her if I can send those along?
You could certainly ask, but follow her instructions. If she wants to read what she has in hand first, then wait. If there's any reason why, say, those four chapters or any of those chapters are particularly illustrative and might make a difference and persuade her to – is this to take the material on for representation? Or she's already representing you?
She's already representing me. But
okay.
I'm wondering if we need to continue to beef up the proposal and flesh out the chapter titles.
Ask her.
Okay.
Yep. Just communicate. That's the most important thing you can do with your agent.
Appreciate that.
Great.
You're most welcome.
Thanks, Julianne. And then we have another hand up here from John. Hi, John.
Hi.
You have a question for Denise.
Thanks so much for being here today. Really appreciate your time.
You're most welcome,
currently
John.
Currently writing a nonfiction with a ghostwriter. It seems from this conversation that it's almost mandatory that you self-publish first to get that track record and to get book sales going and those kinds of things. Would you say that's true?
No, it's not. No, I didn't mean to give that impression. I'm sorry if I did. It's not mandatory or necessary. It's just that what I was trying to say was that previously publishers just didn't take seriously or didn't value self-publishing. Now publishers realize the power of certain authors to self-publish successfully because they can do their own social media and marketing and sell a lot of books. But you certainly don't have to self-publish. What you do have to do, particularly for nonfiction, and what type of book is it? Your book.
John, are you there?
John.
Yeah, it's a story of predatory seniors and what happened with our family.
So narrative nonfiction and a personal story?
Correct.
I know what you do have to have is some sort of platform, and I'm not sure for narrative. I don't represent narrative nonfiction, so I can't speak as confidently about that. But I would think that you would probably again need some sort of social media on that, something about the story that had gone viral. That would show that, wow, people were interested in this topic.
Okay, great.
But you could with a good proposal and a good good manuscript with narrative nonfiction, you should certainly approach an agent for representation for traditional publishing.
Great, thanks so much.
You're most welcome.
Good question. I think the other piece here is it's the networks. The networks that people create. I mean, we can all form our own networks and community.
Good point, yes.
And that's really what the interest is, not necessarily that you've sold through self-publishing or sold the book. In fact, that could work against you if it's already, if you've tapped into everybody, right?
Yes.
But if they see you have a network, you have a reach, you have influence. You influence, there's a lot of interaction. They're looking for that kind of thing.
And particularly with the topic you're writing on.
Right, exactly.
Yes. Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Well, Denise, let's see. I think star two, any last second questions here? Otherwise, we're going to wrap up. I'll let Denise go, and then the rest of us, we can chat a little bit with the few minutes we have left. One more. Let's grab. Here's Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, and thank you, Denise. I took a lot of notes. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome. Glad to hear that.
My only question in quickie is you just mentioned about you do not take narrative nonfiction as an agent yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Does that include memoir?
Yes, I don't do memoir.
So I need to research agents that do take that, correct?
Absolutely. And there, I mean, and that in particular, I mean, there are agents who represent it and other agents who don't. So again, I mean, you could have a wonderful, powerful story that's well written, but if you query the wrong person, you're going to feel bad because, oh, I'm getting all these rejections, but would have nothing to do with the quality of your work.
Right. I like you so much. I wish you were an agent that I could go to.
I know.
Oh, you say
wonderful.
That. You say that to all the girls, I bet.
No. I'm a new writer. I mean, I'm a new author. I've been a writer years. But anyway, I really appreciate today's call. Thank you, Joanne and Denise.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Wendy.
Yeah, we've got great people here. Well, Denise, again, I want to thank you for taking some time. Just appreciate you've been doing this a long time. You have so much experience, and you really covered a lot today. I'm sure everybody took a ton of notes. So I'm going to let you get back to your
busy day. Most welcome, yes. Now I'll go and talk to some of my authors.
Yeah, go talk to your authors.
Okay.
Bye, Denise.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, Joanne. Bye.
You bet. All right, everybody. Hang on one second. I'm going to turn off the recording here.